Hey, Coastline. I'm Colton Cortway, and this is my wife,
Alex Cortway.
And we're here to share our testimony with you guys. All right, for those of y'all who don't know me, I'm 27. I'm from Arkansas, if you couldn't tell. And we came out here because of the Coast Guard. And I actually grew up going to the church my whole life with my parents. So I was always hearing the gospel growing up and kind of responded around the time I was 15 or 16, just kind of had this conviction come over me that I didn't really have a relationship with God. And that was the beginning of my relationship with the Lord and coming to Jesus. And then, yeah, I joined the Coast Guard out of high school and moved to New Orleans and picked up a beautiful wife right there. And now we moved out here. So
I grew up in Louisiana, and I'm Alex Squirtway. And we didn't really go to church as I grew up. It was a little different from Colton's upbringing. My parents were a lot more secular, and I didn't even know who Jesus was. Didn't know the story of the gospel or anything. And all through high school and college, just kind of living for me. And I had a really bad breakup, and my little sisters had started going to church and met the Lord. And they invited me to this youth group, and so I went and, you know, was super jaded about it. And but it was really awesome, and found my relationship with Christ there. And so ever since then, we've just been following the Lord, and I moved to New Orleans to teach, and I met him. So that picks us up here in Astoria.
Yeah, so we met in 2016 at a community group in New Orleans. And at the time, I had recently had a lot of dark times in my life, and I had started coming back to church more frequently, and I was really cleaning up a lot of my life, or the Lord was, better yet, than me. And one day I popped in, I was late to a community group, and I was scanning the room, and I was like, whoa, she's new, all right. So that was the first time I ever met Alex, and not too long after that, we started dating. And then I was, again, you know, struggling, and I decided, well, this is a great opportunity from the Lord. I really like this girl, and I believe the Lord wants me to marry her. So as crummy of a person as I felt like I was like, I better not miss this opportunity. And one of the best decisions I ever made. And it was also really cool that she was so pretty. So that's kind of how we met. And we started dating that October 2016. October 17, we were married. So that was a really big blessing from the Lord. And then the next summer, June 18, 2018, we had to move out here for the Coast Guard. So that kind of started our journey out here to Astoria. Mm-hmm.
So tonight, church, we really wanted to share our testimony with you about moving out here and struggling with infertility and starting our family. As you can see, we're expecting in about 2 weeks or so, and super excited to meet Hope Elizabeth Cortway. So this is kind of the story about how she came to be and the struggles that we went through to get to this place. So when we moved up to Astoria, we were really seeking the Lord more together and individually. I don't know if y'all have ever made a cross-country move away from your family and your friends, but it can be really difficult. And so coming here was a little challenging just because we didn't have that support that we had back home. And so, you know, when you're in those situations, the best thing to do is to seek the Lord and to rely on Him. And that's what we were really trying to do. And we found that we were really growing in our relationship with God and feeling more stable. We both had really good jobs here. Colton was loving doing the rescue swimmer stuff, and I had gotten a job teaching kindergarten at Warrenton. And so things were going really well. We were enjoying life, and I had always wanted a baby, always. I'm sure a lot of ladies feel that as well. And I was really wanting to start trying. And so when we got here, we kind of started that process of, trying to make a family.
She, even from the moment we got married, she always wanted kids. And I was kind of like, yeah, whatever, we'll wait a little bit. And We got here and she really was pressing it. I was like, all right. So, I was indifferent, but it was about a year, right? It had been since nothing had happened.
Yeah. We moved here, in the summer and we had, you know, already stopped preventing in New Orleans. And so by December of the end of that year, we decided, nothing was happening and, we might need to get tested.
Well, she pushed it. I was kind of like, no, it's not a big deal, babe. Everything's fine. She's like, no, I really want to get tested. And so if you're married, you know, eventually you're like, yes, ma'am. We'll
yes.
So we got, and it was her worst nightmare. Like, oh, I'm going to be infertile. And I was just reassuring her, babe, you're just making this up. Everything's fine. You just need to relax. That's what the doctors will always say. Oh, if you relax, it'll happen, which is sometimes true.
Sometimes, yeah.
Yeah, so then we began the process and doing all of the tests to make sure that everything's going right with her and myself. And
Yeah. And the tests so far were coming back fine.
Yeah, everything. I was fine. Was she was great.
Yeah, every
all
test.
Tests. How many tests were there? Like three?
Three or four. And yeah, so the very four. Last test in January was a test where they put ink up your fallopian tubes to see if they're blocked or not. And, you know, we had that test done, and even in the room with the radiologist, they were like, no, the ink came out, everything's fine. So we had no reason to believe anything would be wrong until our follow-up appointment the next week, when the doctor told us that something was wrong and that the radiologist didn't see the results correctly on the screen, and that I had something called bilateral hydrosalpinx, which is basically where both of your fallopian tubes are distended and swollen with fluid and they're corroded and they will not work. And so they have no idea why I had that. Everything else was healthy. We had no reason to believe there was anything wrong, but it was just kind of, and it's not super common to have it in both tubes like I did. So the doctor's recommendation was to see a specialist in Portland to start IVF, because other than that, there's no way to get pregnant naturally with that. There was no way to fix the tubes. There was no way to do anything other than IVF. So
yeah. And after the appointment, it was really, she was really crushed and crying, and I was pretty upset about it too. And more so than that, I just kind of felt helpless because my wife was, you know, so brokenhearted, and there's really nothing I could do about it. And I, of course, obviously, I wanted to be like, oh, fix it, babe, you know, it's out of my hands. And it was a hard time. It was definitely a hard week, so.
Oh, I was so mad. Like, just so upset. Like, God, you know, why? Sorry. I'm pregnant, so I cry all the time. You know, just like, God, why? Like, everything was going fine, and all the tests were coming back great, and then the one test where you can't, like, have it fixed, that was, I just remember being really angry, really angry with the Lord.
Yeah, and I was, again, I felt helpless, and really, I didn't understand what she was going through. I was kind of trying to talk to her about it, and that was hard for me to just, like, you know, it's okay, you know. And I just didn't know what to say. It was the truth. I didn't know how to react. I was just really confused. Yeah. So what day did that happen on?
I don't know.
Was that like a Friday, right?
Yeah,
it was a Friday.
It was a Friday that we got that news.
And then the next weekend, right? Mm-hmm. The next weekend we were here and we ended up getting a fight because, like, of course, my sister had just gotten pregnant, so everyone starts getting pregnant when you find out you're infertile, if you didn't know. And so we ended up getting in a fight about something, and it was just, we were in a really dark spot. She was in a very dark spot, just really like, why is this happening? And long story short, we ended up having, it's kind of a supernatural experience where at the end of it, what I took from it was, I believe the Lord was saying, we're going to have a baby. And I believed that. And I was like, well, I guess we're going to have a baby. Okay. And obviously, he didn't really ever say how we were going to have a baby. But Every word of the Lord proves true. So if God says something, you know it's going to happen. And yeah.
You don't want to see personal.
I'll say a little bit about it in that it wasn't a common experience, you know. And the honest truth is we were following the Lord, but spiritually I was a lot more immature than I am now. But I do believe like what had happened was God just met me where I was at to get the message across that, hey, don't worry, you're going to have a baby. And looking back on it now, like, I wouldn't have done that if I were God. You know, I'm not as kind as him. And really what ended up happening just through a string of strange, strange coincidences, because I was going through my own things mentally and spiritually, the Lord spoke to me to say, all he was saying to me was be. And to be honest, I didn't know why or what that meant. And it was this weird thing. And just being honest, I was like, all right, God, well, if this is you, I need 7 signs that this is you. And lo and behold, like 6 things happened. I was kind of like, oh, that was bad for me. I'm not supposed to ask that, I don't think, from the Lord. And I was like, all right, God, I'm sorry. I believe you. And then, yeah, so nothing happened. And I was kind of like, well, that was weird. And then this crazy instance happened where we kind of had this thing happen and we're like, all right, well, the Lord told us we were going to have a baby in between then and there. And Alex was kind of upset, kind of like, well, this is weird. You know, like I've never experienced anything supernatural, and I don't like go out of my way to try to say that to people. Like, if God wants to speak to someone supernaturally, he's going to do it himself. You can't make him do that. You can't like conjure up the Holy Spirit or something, but he just saw 2 broken people, and I think he just did it. And kind of this baby happened to her somehow. Like, it came up, and we're like, well, I was saying the Lord said this, and she's in her head praying, like, God, if you said this to me, like, this isn't fair. You're going to have to make it clear. And, yeah, so a few minutes later, it was just a weird little coincidence where, like, I was like, this, I had had my 6 signs, you know, and we're sitting there, we go in to get some food after all this, and we're kind of like, this is all weird, and sitting there talking to this woman in the restaurant, and she keeps, like, I'm kind of, like, ignoring her, trying not to talk to her, and she's all like, hey, how are you tonight, you know, and getting my attention. I'm like, golly, she's not getting the hints. And like, I look on her and she's just got a golden necklace and it just said baby on it like that. And I was like, oh my gosh, what's your necklace say? And she said baby. And Alex was all like, oh my gosh, that was weird. So it was just a few minutes after. It was just weird coincidences, and yeah, took that as, all right, well, the Lord said we're going to have a baby. So
yeah, it was different. I'm not one who normally like goes after those kind of things or looks into spiritual supernatural experiences. I just don't typically. And definitely that night it was weird. It felt like the Lord really had told us we were going to have a baby, but I was still not very stoked about that. I was pretty upset and felt like, well, how is that going to happen? I can't have a baby. So still, you know, I think Colton felt a lot more peace about it and was super, like, he held on to that a lot, and I didn't. I kind of felt like almost, I don't want to say tricked by God, but a little bit, like, I felt kind of played, like, that's not fair, don't do that. You know, let me go through this season of healing mentally and spiritually and just basically trying to reconcile, I'm never going to have a child, kind of already throwing in the towel and, like, not wanting to have false hope because, you know, to protect yourself. So that was kind of where I was mentally. But then still at the same time, if it makes sense, holding on to the hope that maybe we could one day have kids. So it's like this two-sided thing of like, I want to give this up and just move on, but I also want to hold on to it and have that dream that I've wanted for so long. Sounded a little crazy. Okay. Yeah, it felt a little like, no, that's not right. Like, that's me grasping at something. Right. That's him grasping at something. That's not true.
Yeah.
And the whole time I was, you know, just praying to God, like, if you said that, you have to show me. Because, yeah. like, there's no way. I'm not believing that. Like, I can't believe that. I need you. I need to concretely you to show me that that's the word that you spoke to me and Colton was baby.
Yeah. So that was in... All that happened in January of 2019.
Yeah, late January.
Yeah. And then so we kind of were like, okay, you know, I was strongly believing that we were going to have a baby. And we didn't know what to do. So... thinking, okay, well, we'll go have an IVF consultation. That's what they said to do. And in vitro fertilization, if you didn't know what IVF was, it's pretty much what they do is they take her egg, my sperm, put it together, and then they like make an embryo and they'll put it in her and she'll get pregnant. That's the simple explanation. So I didn't think anything of it, but we're sitting on this couch one day and she's like, hey, have you thought about IVF ethically? And I was kind of like, what? And she told me about the process, how they really take as many as they can and they'll make as many eggs. Yeah. For instance, just an example, they could take 20 eggs from her, fertilize them with my sperm, and they all become embryos, and then they check each one for, oh, well, this one's got this issue, we'll set it aside, and well, these are your best ones, and it's all for money, really, is the reality. And they say to you this, like, you just get rid of the rest, you just have as many as you want, and then when you're done you can get rid of the rest. So I was kind of like, well, that's not something we believe in. And there was, you know, looking into it, there was a way where people did it who were pro-life and followers of Christ, that you could kind of set with the fertility clinics a set number, a small amount, a reasonable number, where you say, okay, well, we'll only do 4 eggs because that's what we want to have. But you also, in doing that, you have to risk... well, maybe if you fertilize 4 eggs, only 1 or 2 will take, and then that 1 egg might not even be good. And at the same time, this is a $25,000 process, so it's not anything you can just flippantly do if you're enlisted in the Coast Guard and a teacher. So we kind of were like, okay, well, we decided before we did. We were resolved in that. Like, if we're doing this, we're going to do it ethically, and we're resolved in that way. And then we went to the IVF consult, and you tell them about that.
Yeah, so we went to Portland. This was probably March. This is maybe about a month and a half after we got the news of being infertile. So we get to the appointment, and everything's going all right. And, you know, we get and we meet the doctor, and he's kind of explaining the process of what this would look like. And he tells us that, you know, okay, we're going to take as many eggs from you as possible to give you the best statistical chance of having viable embryos, is what he called it. And so, you know, we kind of shared with him some of our issues with that a little bit on the number side. Wasn't addressed a ton until he started talking about what we would do with embryos that are have chromosomal abnormalities, so things like Down syndrome or you know, anything that's a chromosomal disorder. He said we would get rid of those embryos. And, you know, obviously we were not okay with that and kind of spoke our opinion and said, yeah, no, we wouldn't do that. We would transfer those embryos just like any other embryo. And he kind of looked at us funny and said, well, we would get you counseling for that. And again, this is just our experience with IVF. I certainly don't want to make it out to be like there's not good ways to do it, or, you know, and it's all bad. This is just our experience with and how we felt about it and the encounters that we had at that specific fertility clinic with that specific doctor. So it was not a great
experience.
Yeah.
We were both pretty like anxious, and I left a little bit shaky. I wasn't too stoked on the doctor.
Yeah, we got in the car, and just the whole thing of how expensive it was. It was like going to be $25,000 just to transfer one embryo, and that's, you know, our insurance doesn't pay for that. That's not something
cover
that
any of it.
We could have afforded it, but, you know,
it was stressful.
It was really stressful. So we got in the car after, and I started crying. I was like, and I said, I don't want to do this. And he said, good, I don't want to do this either. And, but you know, as the weeks progressed after, you know, it's not that I had doubts, but it was like, this is the only option I have, like, to be pregnant and to have a child. I really felt like it was the only way. And that if I didn't go through with the IVF, then how was God going to give us a baby? You know, how was he going to do that? Because it just wasn't, it didn't make sense medically to me. It didn't make sense in the physical way, how it was going to work. So we decided, I believe after doing IVF, we decided to just take a break for a little bit.
Yeah. And our we were super resolved to do it ethically if we did it, but our resolve, like, we can't do this, we can't do IVF, wasn't really like that. It was waffled back and forth, but I think at the end of the story, we kind of realized that this is not what God wanted from us, and he actually didn't want us to do that.
It was which was hard.
Perfect. So that all happened in March with the IVF, and then we kind of put the brakes on trying to figure out how we were going to have a baby, really, when it wasn't our job to do that in the first place. And I was kind of stressed at work. I was super stressed at home because of all the infertility. She was really struggling. I was not getting it, frustrated, and I could talk for hours about it, but I also had a lot of, like, spiritually, I had a lot of things wrong, a lot of wrong views of God and doctrine and theology or whatever, you know. You can ask me about it if you want, but kind of created this perfect storm for me that I didn't realize was created. And I can even go back to the day it happened in April, but I was at work and I just had a panic attack. Never have dealt with any mental illness, any anxiety, anything like that in my entire life. And it's just like that. My heart started racing. I had one bad thought come into my head and it just kind of took root, and like I freaked out and I called Alex. I didn't know what was going on. I thought I was going insane. And she came into work that night and she prayed for me. And I just remember, like, not understanding what was happening. And so anyways, that kind of gave way into just generalized anxiety, and I would kind of talk to myself, oh yeah, you know, the Lord, he's gonna get me through this, he's using this to make me stronger, but you know, I'll be okay. And it never really subsided. Like, my anxiety just kept continuing, and like this horrible feeling of kind of like imminent danger or impending doom, however you want to put it. Again, I didn't know what it was. I'd never experienced this, and my mind was going insane. And eventually it just led to a place of just complete depression, where I was just so down. I felt hopeless, kind of. Really, I did. I was in despair and hopeless, and I was really scared. Because I had a good friend who had killed himself the year before, and I started being really scared. Like, I thought he was this awesome Christian I looked up to, and I was like, I don't want to do that. I want to live, you know. it's can be hard to admit that, but that's really where I was. And so as embarrassing as it sounds, I would have all these crazy thoughts, and we'd talk all the time. I started opening up to people because I was so scared. I didn't know what was happening. And really, it kind of manifested itself in my faith. And I would have crazy thoughts like, maybe I'm demon-possessed, or I committed the unforgivable sin, and just, am I even saved? You know, am I going crazy? What if I'm some kind of insane person? I could go on and on again all day, but I'll stop there. And really just kind of feeling helpless, couldn't find any help, but... And then ended up, I was dealing with that. That just started in April, and it never really subsided. And then I'm supposed to be there emotionally for my infertile wife, and no, that was not the case. I couldn't really be there for her. So that was a really hard part of all this as well.
Yeah. So while Colton was going through all this, I had no idea what to do. I mean, he had always been super stable, steadfast, like a rock, and and he just crumbled, and I was crumbling, and I had no idea what to do. And it was affecting his job, it was affecting our marriage, it was just all of a sudden everything. It went from me being the only one to having issues to now both of us really had issues, and we didn't know what to do. And but even with all that going on, I still had in the back of my mind, like, I have to figure out how to have a baby. And I don't think that was the most healthy thing, of course.
No.
I really should have been more focused on our marriage and the Lord and just, like, and our mental healing from all that. But I was still scheming because I'm a control freak, you know, and wanting to figure out, okay, how can we make this happen? Colton needs to get his stuff together so we can make this happen. And I tried to be there for him as much as possible, but it was really hard.
I tried to be there for her too.
He did. He was really great.
We were both trying our best.
We were just trying, just holding on by a thread, basically.
And so,
mentally.
Yeah, we. What are some things we looked at? Like,
so we looked into fostering.
Fostering.
Yeah. We really looked into fostering. I even signed us up for the classes. And Colton was kind of like, I can't do that, Alex. Like, mentally, I'm not there. I can't. And so I was like, okay, so maybe fostering's not the right thing. So we looked into domestic adoption and international adoption, and just, it was so expensive and so difficult, and it just, you know, wasn't, it just didn't seem feasible for us. It just seemed like such a big mountain.
Yeah, and I don't know how to explain it other than, like, every time we looked into it, it felt like such a weight was put on me that I was like, we can't do this, babe. And it's kind of confusing because here we are, like, two willing people to do something that the Lord approves of, like adoption,
and we wanted to
like adopt someone or foster someone, and the door was getting slammed in our face for certain reasons. It was just kind of confusing, for sure.
Yeah, it was really confusing, and I mean, this was, you know, probably during the summertime.
Yeah,
you know, after what happened in April and with his mental stuff, and so. We ended up looking into something. I was like, okay, well, if adoption's not going to work out, if fostering's not going to work out, then I've got to figure out a way to fix these tubes. Like, there's got to be something that I can do. If we can't do IVF, like, I've got to figure out some way to fix these tubes. And all the while, we'd had people praying for us for healing. And every month, I thought, this will be the month. You know, this will be the month that God heals us, like, supernaturally. You know, if he told us we were going to have a baby, surely he's going to heal us. And every month, it was, no, nothing. And so, I was starting to feel really resentful and really hurt by God. But then at the same time, you know, I was like, well, God, you know, he's sovereign. And so, like, trying to wrestle with that in my mind of, like, he has a plan. His plan is perfect, but this is not my plan. This is not what I want. And so I started looking into this, like, it's a fertility massage, essentially.
We'll just call it alternative treatment.
Alternative treatment, yes. A very expensive alternative treatment in Portland that was going to cost us $6,000.
It did cost us $6,000.
It did cost us $6,000.
It did.
And basically, it was this super intensive massage where the idea was they could break up the scar tissue in your fallopian tubes, open them up, start some recirculation in that area, and get your tubes to heal on their own.
Yeah.
They had some statistics on it. I think that I was a little more hopeful than I should have been. But we prayed about it, and we didn't have a no about it.
Yeah, there was no, like,
was
real
no, like,
peace, and there was no, there was no anxiety. Like, definitely, God doesn't want us to do it like everything else. There was no stress either.
Yeah.
So it was like, well, I guess we'll just go for it. Like, what do we have to lose?
Yeah, so we kind of, whether it was the right thing to do or not, I don't know, but we went for it. And we said, you know, it's not going to hurt anything to do it other than our wallets losing $6,000. So I called and, you know, scheduled the appointment, and it was going to be, I think it was 5 consecutive days of, you know, us being in Portland, and they didn't have an opening until October, so I was going to have to take off work and miss 5 days of school and do this massage thing that could or could not work. So I was like, yeah, absolutely, let's do it. Anything. I will do anything at this point. So that kind of was nice because that was in October, and I think we scheduled it in July, maybe.
Yeah.
So I felt like it gave me some months to not think about things and not try to scheme or worry. Because I was like, I'm doing this thing in October that's going to totally work and make my life better. So I didn't have to think about it. So it was actually kind of nice because I got some months of not having to think about having a baby. And that was nice. You know, I didn't have to think about it, just kind of lived my life. And that was the first time I felt like in over a year and a half that I'd been able to just relax and not stress about it.
Yep. So kind of one cool thing about the experience, though, just to say shortly, was seeing throughout that time about how I was overburdened with mental illness, or call it what you will, and she was overburdened with infertility, was just to see how some days the Lord would kind of, in a weird way, like free me up to support her emotionally some days, and how some days she would just have strength and feel fine to support me emotionally, and yeah, really fostering that relationship of marriage. That was really cool to see. And honestly, too, some days neither of us were there for each other. Even like on our lowest day, we cried on the floor one day. That's embarrassing to admit, but yeah. But you know, those are the days that like the Lord had to have been there to get us through. I know he was there. But for me, totally God's grace. I just started Googling stuff. maybe you could call it, but I came across a Christian psychiatrist named Ian Osborne, and he wrote about something called obsessive compulsive disorder, which previously I thought was people just had issues in their minds. Like, that's made up. Kind of going forward, what happened is I read about it and I started thinking, oh my gosh, this is exactly what I've been thinking and going through. Like, maybe I'm not the only one. Maybe I'm not going crazy. And I started obsessing about it, surprisingly. And I would just read all about it, like how it worked. And it's, you know, we joke about it all the time. Oh, that person's OCD, they're a clean freak. Like, that is not at all what it actually is like. It's kind of this process where you don't think right, of pretty much a crazy thought could come into your mind and like, oh, I'm going to punch Alex in the face right now. And more normal people would say, well, that's stupid. I'm not going to punch my wife. I love her. And then the thought goes out. But kind of what the process is it just sticks there. And then I'm like, oh my gosh, I want to punch my wife. I'm an awful person, until the point where I'm anxious. And then I do these compulsions to alleviate that anxiety. That's kind of the process in short, but mine was more, and it can manifest itself in like, people who are hypochondriacs, who think they're sick all the time or wash their hands all the time because you're never certain. It's really a doubting disease of uncertainty. You just want certainty that you can't find in something. And mine manifested itself in faith and scrupulosity. And so anyways, I came across this book, and it was this doctor who was a Christian. He did a case study on three different people who he believed had these same things. And one of them was Martin Luther, John Bunyan, and her name was Saint Therese. She was a Catholic nun, and they all had these crazy, tormenting, wild thoughts I would read about and think, oh my gosh, these guys are respected and they had the same issues as me. Like, this is crazy. Maybe I'm not insane. So I read into it, and his whole premise of his book was, can faith heal this disease? Can it heal this issue? And I was totally intrigued. Like, I gotta know about this. So I read it, obsessed about it. I even had to set it aside a few times because I came so obsessed. But it started a healing process, and it gave me a little something to look into. And I had always tried to be reading my Bible and praying, and honestly, it caused more anxiety in that time. But after reading that, it helped me to separate my time with scripture reading and prayer as something not to do for healing or for understanding, but just as something to kind of know God. And in that, I started being able to do it more. And I wouldn't read the Bible and pray and have anxiety. I would actually read it and think, oh, well, that was cool. That was something kind of true and concrete I can grab on. And it was very, very slow at first. But that's how it all started.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to mention kind of with my struggles that, like, I'm a whole lot better than I was. And we were talking about 1 Corinthians 15:10 when Paul says, by God's grace, I am what I am. And what I used to think was something horrible, I've really come to realize solely that God's used it for good. He's used my mental struggles for good, and he's used it to teach, to force me into a spot of not depending on myself, being more humble and learning really about God's grace. And I am a whole lot better than I was, by God's grace, for sure. But I still go back into the same old habits in my mind still, and I'm on the road to recovery. And it's just cool that, I don't know, I'll be honest, I have no idea why all this happened to me, why all this happened to her. And with the baby, it's easy to see sometimes, but it's just cool that God works. He's just so mysterious in how he does things. And I probably never will know why all this is happening, but I'm super stoked. And just the fruits of our marriage and our pregnancy, looking back on how I had behaved in the past and things, like, it's all so undeserved. And we're just stoked to be here and be a family together and raise hope. Yes. So I was getting a little bit better.
Yeah, so still, Colton was kind of going through this process of healing, kind of maybe getting some understanding about what he was dealing with.
Yeah.
And how he could use some strategies to implement to get better and to be on that road of healing. So that was really encouraging to see. And as the months went by, you know, we ended up going to Portland and doing that alternative treatment, the massage, and it was fine. You know, we had a good time. We got to go out to eat and hang out at our friend's house, and it was almost like a little vacation, which was sort of nice because we you know, I got to miss out on work for 5 days, so that was really nice. And so we get back and they tell us, okay, wait a month, no, 2 months, I believe. Mm-hmm. Was it 2 months? Yeah, they said wait 2 months, and then get that ink test redone, and we'll see how the massage affected your body, and if it helped to open the tubes and to clear things out and to, you know, start that process of healing. So we get back to Astoria, life's normal. You know, I'm still kind of waiting, have a little bit of anticipation at the end of that month, thinking, oh, maybe, you know, things are better, maybe things have gotten healed, and nothing. And oddly enough, I was starting to like lose my hair, and like weird stuff was happening after the treatment, and
yeah,
it was really odd. So then
And $6,000.
Yes, and $6,000. So we it's probably like November at this point, and I had got this book by Russell Moore. He's a pastor, and it's called Adopted for Life, and it's all about how we're adopted into God's kingdom through Jesus, and just Christian adoption, but also physical adoption. You know, it goes through all the different types of adoption. He, I believe, adopted 2 Russian boys, and because his wife couldn't have kids. So I just was reading it, you know, kind of Colton was going through reading some books. I like to read, but it can be hard for me sometimes to read nonfiction. So I was trying to get into that and find some different perspectives from people who are going through things. So as I was reading this book, it went over the different types of adoption, domestic, international, and then it talked about something called snowflake adoption, which I had never heard of. And it's basically where, another word for it or term for it is embryo adoption. So it's basically where people who have done IVF use the embryos that they want from IVF and then have extra embryos left over. And the options are you can either get rid of those embryos, which are full genetically people. You can tell by just the embryo if it's a girl or a boy. It is not separate egg and sperm. It is a person, you know. So they could either get rid of them, or if they weren't comfortable with that ethically, they could go through Christian adoption agencies who match people. And you basically adopt it just like a child, but it's an embryo. And you can put it in you and get pregnant and have it. And it's not biologically your child. It's biologically somebody else's child, but you now have adopted that child. Just kind of like regular adoption, except you get to be pregnant. So I was like, wow, I've never heard of that. So I mentioned it to Colton and was like, hey, have you ever heard of this? And, you know, he's like, no. And, you know, I think
yeah, that's all
Colton
that
was like, that's part. Literally the only conversation yeah. we had about it. So just super brief. I kept reading the book. It was really good. And then a month later, we were going to redo that test. I can't remember if it was, I believe it was before we redid the test.
It was before.
It was.
And yeah, so she had ended up reading about embryo adoption and clicked on some website link like, I'm interested. And
yeah,
fast forward, I go to check the mail one day and there's this big package in there to Mr. and Mrs. Courtway. And I'm like, well, that's weird. So I opened it and it's a whole book about embryo adoption and an application to adopt an embryo. And I was, surprisingly enough, really mad because we were in a good spot. She had calmed down a little bit. I was getting a little healing and I'm thinking, here she goes again, trying to figure something out. And so she's getting her hair done at our neighbor's house and I kind of walked over there and went up and, hey, yeah, I don't remember what I said.
You said, is there something you need to tell me? And yeah. I had no idea what he was talking about.
I said it in a very mean tone. I was pretty upset and felt like she had gone behind my back. Little did I know, she had no idea that they were going to send
I thought it was
this
like,
package in the
you know,
mail.
Something where they're going to send you an email or something which yeah. that just gives you like a brochure or something.
Yeah.
I didn't. I never would have gone behind his back. I just yeah. didn't think that's what they were going to send. But they did. So, and that was, I think, a week before we were going to redo the ink test. Yeah.
So then I was very upset about that. But I ended up going on a walk and just kind of grumbling or whatever you want to call it. And I remember having this thought come into my head. You said you believe this your whole life. And what the thought was about was that life begins at conception when we're conceived. And I just kind of stopped for a second on my walk. I was like, I have said that my whole life. I've actually been pretty outspoken about it. And here I am thinking this is weird or grumbling about it. And I just kind of at that moment was like, okay, God, if you want us to do this, I'm open for it. Like, I'll do it. And, so I went home and kind of came up to her and I was like, hey, babe, I'm open to do this. I'm really open. Like, so we set a day. I said, well, we'll wait a week and then we'll apply for it. Let's just pray on it for a week. We'll just let everything sit. And if we still want to do it, we'll put in an application.
Yeah.
And then a week later, we put it in. And then what happened was we got the test.
Yeah. It was, I think, December 7th is when we put in the application.
Yep.
For that to do embryo adoption, and it was, you know, it was a very lengthy application, and we didn't even know if we'd be accepted because it said you needed to be married for 3 years, and we'd only been married for 2 years, and you know we're younger, so we didn't know if that would affect things, but we were like, you know, we're gonna send it, so we sent it, and that was, I think, yeah, December 7th, and then maybe
later,
that next week on a Thursday. We were going to get the ink test redone. So we go, and I don't know why, but for some reason, I had a feeling, you could call it whatever, it was just a feeling probably, but I had a feeling that it wasn't going to work. And I knew the results were going to be what they were going to be. So we got it redone, got the results, and the massage alternative treatment that we had actually made things worse. There was more scarring, more damage, And it was not looking promising. So I had peace about it, oddly, and I'm really thankful to the Lord for that, because that could have been a really devastating blow after all we'd been through. And that was a Thursday. And then on Saturday, we got a phone call that we had been accepted for embryo adoption.
Yeah.
And it was really crazy, because they already thought they had an embryo lined up for us, which doesn't typically happen. This can be a really long process. Not as long as traditional adoption, but it can still be kind of long to get matched with a family and everything. So they thought they had a family for us. And so I was super excited. You know, I was like, okay, what? And I'm a doer. Like, what do I need to do to finish this application? So just like traditional adoption, you would make like a photo book of you and your family. You have to get a home study done. You have to fill in. We had to have, you know, 5 reference letters, just a lot of things, obviously, because, you know, they want to check and make sure that you're a good family, you're going to be a good fit for somebody. So in the whole month of December, I set my mind to doing this, because that's, you know, I'm a checklist person. I was like, I got to do this stuff. I'm going to get it done.
She did.
And I did.
I let her do it too. I was like, go for it.
So we got it all done. I sent out the photo books. I had the references in. I had all the applications. We had to do like a statement of faith, because it's a Christian organization, and say like what we believed, and had it all done by the end of December. And then we had a home study as well. Home study went okay. I thought it wasn't going to go well because we had found a mouse in our house. And so I kind of freaked out. I was like, they're not going to, they're not going to let us do it. You know, we have mice in our house. And, but everything went without a hitch. And then, that first family that they thought we would be matched with fell through. The mom, I don't think, really understood what embryo adoption was. And I was a little crushed, but was like, you know, it's okay. We're in a better place spiritually. If God wants this to happen, it's going to happen, and he's going to find a family for us. So like a week later, I get an email at school, and it's from Maria. She's the adoption liaison person, who we were going through, that said, you got matched with someone. So I'm freaking out, so excited, you know, trying not to open the email at work because I wanted to wait home to get with Colton. And so I get home and, you know, I had asked Colton, did you get the email that saw that we got, you know, matched with somebody? And so we opened up and it's their whole profile, you know, about the family. And it was, it was so cool.
We were stoked about it.
Yeah,
that.
We were
they
stoked.
They ended up having 7 embryos.
Yeah, they had 7 embryos really cool. That we could adopt. And they had 2 boys of their own. And so it was really cool, and we were just so excited, you know, just beyond excited. And
every step from the application on was just
so smooth.
Easy. It just went boop boop, fell into place.
We had
you
peace
know?
About it. Everything went really smoothly. We got accepted. So now at this point, we had to decide if we were accepting them. And we were you know, we prayed about it, and we were like, absolutely, like we want this match. And so we kind of were like, okay, well, what's the next step? The next step is, you know, we signed all the contracts to say basically when the embryos get thawed out and transferred to me, they're legally ours. And so we were like, okay, well, that's the next step. So we decided not to go with the fertility clinic that was in Portland that we had gone with for the IVF consult. And decided to go with one in Seattle that this organization uses a lot. So the only problem was my tubes. Because for people who have bilateral hydrosalpinks, it can cut your chances of a transfer of an embryo working by 50% just because of how it is. I don't know. So we had to have a consult with the doctor to see what to do about the tubes.
We ended up getting them.
Well, we had a phone consult, and we said, you know, whatever the doctor says, we're going to just go with. And the doctor recommended that we get them removed. So that was in the beginning of 2020, right around then, right before COVID hit. So we were like, okay, so we met with my doctor and scheduled the surgery, and it was kind of freaky because you have to sign a paper that says, you know, hey, after this, like, you were 100% infertile. And so it's like, I knew that. I knew that I was infertile. And I knew those tubes weren't going to do me any good. But it was still a little hard to let go, you know, because you, that's it. You are done. You're literally burning the bridges. And, so we scheduled the surgery and I had a lot of peace about it. And I remember being like, they were about to wheel me to the operating room and like Colton started crying. And so, you know, I was really, I actually didn't cry. I remember I didn't cry. Colton was like upset about it, but
I used to cry baby that day.
It's okay. And I remember just having so much peace when they wheeled me back and they hadn't given me drugs yet. So it wasn't that. And this was before the anesthesia. And I just remember thinking, you know, this is what the Lord wants. And like, this is going to be okay. Like we can do this. And, yeah, it was really good. After the surgery, the doctor came in and was like, you know, your tubes were a lot worse than we thought. And you made the right call. So we had that confirmation of like, man, we had done the right thing. We gave me a tissue. Thank you. Thank you. Of like, we did the right thing. Because, you know, they weren't doing me any good. And it's like holding on to something that isn't helping you because you think it gives you comfort. You know, you think it gives you this false sense of security. And it's like I could have either held on to the idea that like maybe one day those tubes would have been healed. But that would have kept me from, or kept us from moving in the direction that the Lord wanted us to move. It was a huge step of faith. And I'm really thankful that God gave us the strength to get through that step because, I don't know if we would have been here without doing that step. So obviously that was right before COVID. So thankfully we were able to get that surgery done before, because I want to say it was like a week or two after the surgery, they stopped doing all elective surgeries. And then we had had the embryo transfer scheduled for April. And then
COVID shut it all down.
COVID shut down our fertility clinic in Seattle. So they were like, you know, we're going to have to postpone this indefinitely. So again, this was a really awesome, and you know, I know COVID sucks, but it was a really cool time because we didn't have to think about it. You know, we knew the next step we were going to take, and we had a couple months to just rest and enjoy each other. And
so we ended up getting a phone call around June, right? That the fertility clinic was taking certain patients, and all our stuff was pretty much in line, ready to go. So they said, hey, why don't y'all come up here and do this? So we said, absolutely, we're stoked to do it. We did all our appointments we had to do before that, and then we went up. Whoop, you remember the day? What day it was?
June 26th.
June 26th. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we went up to Seattle. It was a beautiful, sunny day. We went in. It's crazy. Pulled up, dropped her off. They wouldn't let me go in. She went in. About 20 minutes later, whoop, we were FaceTiming. She came back, and I was like, well, that was quick. And obviously, we wanted to consecrate her, so we got some Chick-fil-A.
Colton zoomed through that a little bit, but when I went up, we had to FaceTime because of coronavirus. Yeah. He couldn't be in the actual appointment with us, but it was just such an, it's just so weird what technology and science can do now, you know? It was like, I got to see a picture of her as an embryo. They were like, do you want to see your baby? And I was like, before we put her in you. And they had unfrozen her, and she had expanded, which is what they want. And so I got to show Colton on FaceTime, and, like, they had her, you know, she was microscopic at that point. And so they had her on the TV screen, and they even had, like, a little picture printout for us that we still have of her as an embryo. And then, you know, it's funny, they, like, put her in you, and they were like, okay, you're good to go. And I'm like, can I go to the bathroom? Is she going to, like, come out? I had no idea how it worked. And they're like, no, you're good. You can go to the bathroom. It's all fine. Like, so we just had to wait 10 days, basically. Longest 10 days of our lives.
Well, those, like, really, you know.
Yeah, those 10 days of waiting for that test were, like, the worst 10 days ever. You know, like, one day I'd be like, oh, it totally worked. I'm so pregnant. Like, I'm sure. And then, but I like, in self-preservation mode, most of those 10 days was like, it's not going to work. Like, this didn't work. Who are we to think that this would have worked? Like, 100% it didn't. And that's why I really wanted to go on the run after the blood test, because I couldn't, you know, I like to exercise to help alleviate like anxiety and stuff. And I was like, I can't deal with this waiting anymore. Like 10 days has been enough. I don't think it's going to work. And then seeing, you know, the positive, the email that said the pregnancy test was positive was so exciting for maybe the first hour. And then after that, I was like, well, they have to redo it in 2 days. So, I mean, we can't be excited until after that, you know? And so it was constantly this like trying to protect yourself from possible hope and not wanting to, you know, because when you've been given bad news so many times, you just expect that's going to happen again. Mm-hmm. And so to finally hear good news was almost too much to deal with, you know, and then to hear good news again 2 days later that like the test was positive and that your levels are going up appropriately. Like it was like, no, surely that's not right either. But here we are, and I mean, like Colton said, yeah, we got Chick-fil-A after, so that was the first thing Hope ate when she was in, was Chick-fil-A, as rightly so, so.
Yeah, so, and then we got the pregnancy test, and boom, we were pregnant.
Yeah, we were on a run,
because
we had gotten the blood draw that morning, 10 days later.
We got an email that we were pregnant, and obviously, Alex cried, if you wanted to guess that.
Yeah, I got the email in the middle of our run, and it just, you know, all I saw was you're pregnant, and I totally just lost it. And, you know, we were on the boardwalk and had to go sit on a bench to calm down. And so, you know, we FaceTimed our family and everything, and they redid the test 2 days later to make sure your levels are going up so that it's, you know, a healthy pregnancy. And everything was good. So it's been a really easy pregnancy so far. And we found out it's a girl and her name is Hope Elizabeth Courtway. We feel like the Lord gave us that name for her. And, we're 38 weeks pregnant today as we're videoing. Don't know whether she'll be here or not when this plays, but we'll see. So we're really excited and really thankful that, you know, God keeps his promises even when it doesn't look like the way you think it should look. You know, this child is not biologically ours, and we never would have thought that embryo adoption was the way that we would go. Didn't even know it was a thing, to be honest. And it's such a cool way to give God glory and to show that he cares about you, you know, even as you're in your mother's womb, you know, he cares about us and he cares about those little embryos and he cares about me and Colton. And so that's just been really cool to learn that in this time.
Yeah, and I think a verse that stood out for all our strivings and trying to figure out what to do, one thing that was learned and really still is being learned by us is from Psalm 127 that says, "Unless the Lord builds the house, those who build it labor in vain. Unless the Lord watches over the city, the watchman stays awake in vain." And I think that was really true, like that the Lord has to be in it if it's going to succeed.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it has been really cool. And, you know, if you're out there listening and hearing about embryo adoption for the first time, like, awesome. I didn't know what it was either. So make it known to your friends. It's just a really awesome alternative. There are already about a million embryos that are frozen worldwide that are, you know, that are human lives.
I think it's actually just nationwide, not worldwide.
So that's really cool.
Yeah. We're really thankful that we got to be a part of it. You know, I always ask Colton, like, if you could have a biological child or if you could have Hope, you know, what would you rather have? Just because I like to ask weird questions like that. Colton's always like, oh, Hope, for sure. I would no, 100%. We wouldn't take it back. So it's been a real blessing for us, and we're excited to get to share that with you, and hopefully it encouraged y'all and shared some of who our God is and what he's
for sure.
I mean, the verse that, like, always, and this has been one since even before all the infertility, John 16:33, "In this world there will be trouble, but take heart, for I have overcome the world." And that one's always just been like, it's that double-sided coin of like, you're gonna have trouble in this world, that's a guarantee, but we can have courage. We can take heart in Jesus, knowing that He overcame. You know, we don't have to be scared. We don't, infertility, mental illness, anxiety, death, any of that. Like, we don't have to fear, because He died for it all, you know? So that one's always been a super, just one that I can hold on to in those times, you know, take heart, be of courage.